call is now being recorded.
Okay, Fred, so you said that you met, why don't you just, you know, you met someone.
That's right. I met a lovely young woman and we went on a date. We actually went on a couple dates. And she kept mentioning to me that she had a secret, you know. And she was like, first of all, when I first saw her, I thought she didn't look like anybody I've ever seen before. She just had this odd, her facial features were just odd. And she also...
Can you describe it at all?
Yeah, sure. She's Asian, but I'd never seen an Asian, at least she said she was, I'd never seen an Asian woman or Asian person with a face like her face. Like, her eyes were like really big and kind of bulged a little bit, and her lips were really like thick and luscious. I've never seen an Asian person with super, like, you know, and then also her body was like she had these really big hips. Most Asian women don't have, she looked like a Puerto Rican woman or something, you know? So anyway, she was interesting, and she was really, really smart and very intelligent. So we went out, she kept mentioning she had this secret. It didn't dawn on me till later, because I kept thinking, what's the biggest secret somebody could have? You know, like they're HIV positive or something, and I'm not going to tell you. Or they're really a man, you know, they're a man and she... that's what my first thought. Oh, my gosh.
That was my first... When you said she had a secret, I thought that was it.
But she's not. Found that out.
How can you tell definitively that somebody wasn't a man, though?
Because her body wasn't, you know,
there was nothing that seemed manlike.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way a man can have a body like a Puerto Rican woman. It just doesn't turn out that way. I mean, and there wasn't any plastic surgery or anything like that, you could tell.
Okay.
I've been with women who have had plastic surgeries and implants, and it's pretty easy to tell. You know, you squeeze their breasts and it feels like there's a old dog toy in there or something, you know?
Yeah. That's horrible.
But so anyway,
that's a good description, though.
I actually thought about that for a while. But anyway, I thought, well, what could it be? What is the 21st century scientific biggest secret you could have? And so it finally dawned on me that she is an alien.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not like she needs a green card or anything, but she's like an ET, an extraterrestrial, you know. Mm-hmm. And well, I don't know why, what her purpose here is or whatever. Maybe she wanted my DNA or something. I have no idea.
Did she confirm this?
Well, I mean, I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't want to, like, scare her away, I guess, we were talking about we need to have our brains working at full capacity, and this isn't a dress rehearsal, and what do you want to do, and if money were no object, what would you be doing? And you said, I'd be in outer space.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's you know, at this point, sure, traveling is great, and I still haven't been to Japan and Brazil and stuff. But, you know, I guess the ultimate travel, traveling would be extra planetary, I guess,
The question you asked me, I was like feeling like, hey, it's, the question you asked me was kind of one of these things like, if you had no fear, what would you do, right?
Yeah.
But your version of it was, if you had unlimited money, what would you do? And it's supposed to make you realize that there's this thing that you could be doing, which you're holding back from doing.
Yeah.
But I gave kind of a smart-ass answer, right, which was something that you could only do with a lot of money, which is to go into outer space, which is what a lot of rich people are supposedly planning on doing.
Yeah.
But it really does point out that there's some things that you can't do as a non-rich person. Anyway,
I think all of us, to a certain extent, want to make our mark in the history books so that you feel that this is not all for, you feel like it isn't all for naught, And at this point, how do you make your mark in the history book? You can invent a source of energy that is constant. Like, what do they call it? You can create some sort of a machine that's like completely non-pollution and creates energy. That would change the face of the planet, Or you could, assassinate a horrible person.
I never thought of that. That's something I never thought of. That seems easier than inventing energy.
Yeah. Or you could be like the guy who reveals, that they're extraterrestrials, you're the guy who unveils, an ET, or whatever, or you're the guy who wrote that song, or whatever. I can't even sing it.
Right. Wait. So this is going to be how you get in the history book. You have unveiled, as you say, an extraterrestrial.
Right, and then so the question is, if I figure out her secret, I know it. Do I reveal it, or do I even reveal it to her? Because I don't want her to like disappear like a genie or something. I don't know. Or like Mixoplex,
I don't remember Mixoplex. I mean, I remember the name Mixoplex, but he was a Superman villain.
Yeah, and he appears and then he annoys the heck out of you, and the only way you can get rid of him is you have to make him say his name backwards or something like that. I don't know.
Oh my god, that's hard.
So in any event, that would be great. Plus, I think I would love to meet an alien just so I could just be like, can I go with you? Like in that Moon X and Close Encounters, I could see some people get to get on the ship and.
As a kid with watching Close Encounters and just, my godfather was heavily into aliens and acting like they're real. I think for me, I always was like, I cannot live without knowing who the extraterrestrials are and going to their planet. I cannot stand not knowing this, And I sort of came to, accept that I'm apparently not going to find out. But then what if you thought of this as just being like a metaphorical need that you have, Really, when you say you want to know extraterrestrials, you really want to just, know the inner workings of other people or something. It's not like literally extraterrestrials. You have this need that isn't so hard to fill, but you're putting it on something that is impossible to fill. Except in your case, because, of course, you've done it.
Well, I mean, my dad's always, since the 70s, has been obsessed with UFOs, and that's his kick, and he has his website about UFOs and all this stuff, So it's been ingrained in me as a kid that there's something out there, Brands, I visited a crop circle because he showed me this documentary once. I was visiting him a couple years ago in Vancouver, Canada, where he lives, and we watched this documentary called Stargazers about crop circles, and it was fascinating. I never really gave crop circles much thought, you know, just as that movie with Mel Gibson or whatever. And it was a fascinating documentary, and I said to my dad, wow, I want to go to a crop circle. And he said, well, all you have to do is ask for one. You know, mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I want a crop circle for Christmas or whatever. So like 2 weeks later, I'm back down in California, the Bay Area, mm-hmm. and I turn on the evening news. And there's the newscaster, and he's standing there in the middle of a crop circle, and he's saying, live from the crop circle, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and it was only about a half an hour, 45-minute drive or so, me and my girlfriend at the time, we hopped in the car and drove straight there. And it was amazing. It was amazing. There was just these huge formations in this wheat field. And it made the cover of the Chronicle the next day. And I have that issue somewhere. I don't know.
That's awesome. But that's also about another kind of topic, which is about, you know, like that movie The Secret, or how if you want something, you know, you just have to name it. There's a lot of different beliefs that converge on this one idea. Is that if you want something, you just have to know what it is and say what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And it plays, yeah, exactly. That plays a part. And then there's also, anyway, when you go into a crop circle, there's an energy and you're supposed to absorb it. And they've done tests where they've taken wheat or whatever grain, some different grains or corn, and they've grown the seeds from inside the crop circle and from outside. And the seeds that are inside the crop circle grow a lot stronger and larger and healthier and hardier. And they don't know why. That's, you know, it's really bizarre. And also, what it does, apparently, if you visit a crop circle, is it opens you up to more contact.
Mm-hmm.
So then another, you know, few weeks after that, I saw a really odd, you know, unidentifiable object flying in the sky, which is called, mm-hmm. in other words, a UFO. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's funny. Most people think like you believe in UFOs, but because you assume it's aliens, but it's not necessarily. It's just an unidentified flying object. That's what a UFO is, you know.
But I do think, you know, to open a can of worms here, that there is sort of an alternate body of knowledge that people go around having, you know, like not the sanctioned body of knowledge. And it sort of includes, like, UFOs are in that body. So, and so are all kinds of, like, you know, cures for the body and, other things which are, you know, not proven in ways that we, in the channels that we, you know, that most people, or at least the people who sort of decide what the official line is. I forget, and my syntax is too complicated for me to follow at this point. I had too many commas, or like I forget where I started. But I was just arguing with this somebody who, you know, was saying that something about there's studies that have been done that show that, you know, the water molecules, that if you talk nicely to them, they have a pretty pattern, and if you are harsh to them, they have a ugly pattern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
that.
I mean, it seems like you would probably believe that. Whereas I would be like, you're going to have to do way more than like two or three studies in order to convince me of that, because that seems to be along the lines of like this alternate body of knowledge, which I'm like, for some reason I haven't been able to.
Well, right now, right now in the current issue of The New Yorker is an article by Michael Pollan, who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Omnivore's Dilemma.
And The Botany of Desire, and most recently, Cooked, I believe. He's a professor at UC Berkeley in the School of Journalism, I think. But he writes about food. This is his subject, and the article in the New York Times is about plants and plant consciousness and plant intelligence. And scientists now beginning to realize that plants are people too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we do have these paradigm shifts. I mean, we do, and it's hard. It's so hard for us to let go of them. You know, it's so hard for us to let go of them. I mean, think of all the vegetarians who are going to have to seriously rethink, you know, their ways when this becomes more mainstream, when we realize that plants not only are alive, but are conscious living beings, you know, and they're not lesser than us. In fact, I remember there was a guy, back in New York, he had some musician friends who made a living watering plants in office buildings. And this guy was like the office building plant watering, you know, nerd. And he had a theory where he said if aliens ever came down to the planet, they'd want to talk with the trees and the plants more than they would want to talk with human beings, because trees and plants, vegetation makes up 99% of the biomass on the planet. We are nothing. Animals are nothing. We're just, you know, and we think we're gods. And
isn't it kind of to say that aliens would talk to plants? I mean, isn't that kind of like human centric to think that plants, if they're conscious, they must like why would they necessarily? I feel like the whole thing about plants is that they don't have this need to. I mean, sure that there are ways that they communicate, but it's all about sharing resources. You know, like how the resources are divided. But I don't feel like they would have the need to be like, how's everybody feeling today? You know, how's your year been? But maybe. I mean, because they just know, you know? They know what everything they need to know.
Yeah, I mean, check. At this point, it's all just speculation, I guess. But, yeah, right. They probably wouldn't want to talk about, you know, Miley Cyrus or something. But
I mean, is there a plant for Miley Cyrus? Is there like a famous tree that everybody talks about? That famous tree,
maybe
like in,
you know,
like in Avatar. So I guess that's what I have to think about doing, is when people have ideas that I think are just unlikely, that I need to keep listening to find out, you know, what it is they're really. You know, their whole thought system.
Yeah.
Because they're the aliens.
Well, if we can just come full circle back to that. I mean, I would love to, you know, I'm just waiting for the aliens to pick me up, man. You know, really, I have been for years now. And I just kind of want to just see what else is out there and get off this flying rock, you know.
Maybe you mean, even though you're saying aliens, what you may mean is like that place where you feel comfortable, your home world, your mothership, you know, like where will you walk in and they'll all be like at these cool, like neon lit, keyboards with like cushy chairs around like instrumentation panels, and they'll have like Tang in pitchers, and you'll be like, and they'll be like, Fred, we get you, you know, sit down, do your job.
I know. And I'll, then I'll be like, I didn't ask for the anal probe.
What? Wait, now where does the anal probe come into it?
Do you remember, don't you remember? It's like a John Sayles movie, and there's an actress, and she's telling her friends that she had an audition for a woman who gets abducted by aliens. And her one line that is, I didn't ask for the anal probe. And that's the one line that she has for the audition. And so the casting director is making her say it over and over again in different ways. And she's like, I didn't ask for the anal probe. I didn't ask for the anal probe. I didn't ask for the anal probe. I didn't ask for the anal probe.
Is John Sayles the one that made End of the World and the Far at the End of the World or something and the zombie movie, or is that somebody else?
John Sayles?
Yeah.
What
did he make?
I don't know. I don't know if he's made a zombie movie. Maybe.
Because there's that English guy who made, like, a movie about zombies.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Set in England, and they hide in a bar.
Oh, 28
Not to bring it back. No, that's a real scary zombie movie. This was a comedy.
Oh, this is a comedy?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Shaun of the Dead?
Right. That's not John Sayles.
No, I don't know who that is. I can't remember his name.
Oh.
I can't remember his name.
Who's John Sayles? Anyway, so what I'm saying is
John Sayles is an American filmmaker who makes, like, kind of politically conscious films. What did he make? The Return of the Sea Caucus 7 and Lone Star. And he's made a bunch of movies that you just then never make it into the mainstream, but he's been working for a while.
Well, what if the aliens, I mean, think, like, what if it's not literal, that the things that we have always wanted was not actual people from outer space, even though we thought it was, you know, the things that we really felt were missing from our lives, but that we felt like aliens, and we wanted the rest of our kind to come and pick us up.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I mean, there's that theory that we do come from the stars, you know. And, yeah, maybe we're waiting for the return.
Well, I'm not speaking literally. You're still speaking literally.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying maybe just psychologically we have this need to believe that we're not alone because we feel alone, whereas not everybody does.
Yeah. Well, at some point we are going to discover life on another planet. I mean, we're getting there. You know, every few years we discover more and more and more. And at some point they're going to say, oh, here's a planet with Earth-like atmosphere.
Even if the aliens are real, and no, I mean, I think there's got to be life somewhere, and there's got to be intelligent life somewhere. But even if we've been visited for this whole time, you know, and they've got, you know, and they're running Pinkberry, you know, and they're really, like, actually here. Even if that's the case.
Yeah.
Our need to like, feel like we're not complete without knowing them. And the fact that some people have this need more than others. I mean, I know that I sort of always felt like a outsider.
Yeah.
And never really felt like I was part of a group. And I'm just saying, I mean, you know, like you said, what would you do if you had all the money in the world? And I said, I'd go into outer space. Well, I can't do that, literally. You know, because chances are, unless something really astronomically unlikely happens, I'm not going to go into outer space. So I, you know, my best bet is to think of like, well, what is the, you know, the psychological need I might have that could be met without actually doing that thing that I think I want. And
yeah,
and I mean, because I may not meet, because I may not meet the extraterrestrials, what would satisfy that need I have to meet them?
Sure. Like what, I recently saw a show on PBS or something, I can't remember, but they were interviewing, a man, about his daughter, and his daughter did something very successful and the interviewer said, did you feel proud? Were you proud that your daughter did this? And he said, no, I wasn't proud because pride is a sin. He said, I felt spiritually satisfied. And I think that's what we're shooting for. You know, yeah, sure. Okay. What will make me feel spiritually satisfied? You know, what will make me feel like if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, it was okay, because,
right,
you know,
right.
Yeah, and it's good. I mean, I've actually had that thought just this year, because, you know, I finally, like, I did, for acting-wise, I had a great role in this Tom Stoppard play. You know, it was the most challenging role I've ever done, and I felt spiritually satisfied, and then there's a short film that me and my buddy did, and it went to these film festivals, and I flew out to film festivals, and then I had a commercial running on TV, and friends would see it and say, I saw your commercial, you know, and so...
Really? What?
I felt spiritually sick. It was for Diamond Certified. It was like, 4 diamonds for your business. I think it's only like Northern California market or something. I don't know if it was in LA, but who knows?
Okay.
But anyway, it was non-union, so it's not like I made a shitload of money or anything.
Right.
But anyway, so on that front was great, and then I looked back at my life and I said, you know, I've loved women, and they've loved me, and that's happened multiple occasions. That doesn't happen a lot, you know, to people. So I don't, you know, sure, it would be great to fall in love again and get married and have a family. That's one thing that I think I'd like to do now. Oh, but if it doesn't happen, then that's fine, and I'm not going to push the issue, you know. And then on the other side of things, like, I also had a job of, like, I actually felt like a real mensch, you know. I got a job, you know, I made, like, I don't know, $72,000 or something, you know. I had, like, I was marriage material. I finally feel like I was making headway, you know, and it's the biotech industry, and it's not like it's anything. I'm not a scientist, but I was helping scientists. It was project management, managing clinical trials, and we were doing good stuff. I mean, it's a sketchy business, you know, pharma, you know, drug development is, because there's so much money involved, but we did get FDA approval for a drug to help men with prostate cancer, and it was approved by the FDA faster than any drug ever in the history of the FDA. In 99 days, they approved it, and it usually takes months and months and months and months.
Okay, but Fred, you're only, what, 42? 43.
Yep, 42. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean...
But yeah, I know, but look, for 10,000 years, our lifespan was like 30, maybe? You know?
But so it sounds like you're trying to say, like, you know, you're singing about the life that you had, and, like, this is what you did, and, you know, you're only 42. You know, you've got... This is the beginning of the second half.
Yeah, sure. But at the same time, I guess if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, or if I got a terminal diagnosis, I wouldn't be as bad as 10 years ago. 10 years ago, if I had the same thing, I would probably take my own life, you know, which is ironic. But I would, you know, I would be devastated, you know, because there are all these things that I have yet to do. And I feel like I've done, you know, sure, I haven't had it to win an Oscar, and I haven't made 6 figures or whatever, or however, I don't know, however you think success is measured, but I feel that I could go, that I could be, I could die, or I could be taken from this planet, or have sex with an alien. And I would feel spiritually satisfied. I feel spiritually satisfied. I actually do, you know, and I've tried to make amends with the people that I feel, you know, I've transgressed, and, set things right, as they say, to make things right, you know, and I've done the traveling that I wanted to do. Sure, I haven't been every place.
All right, Fred, all right, I get it. I feel that way too, you know, I feel that way too. But you know, it's not enough. You gotta keep going, and then you gotta think about, you know, you gotta think about it, I think, unless you just know what you're, like a plant, what you need to do. It would be good to be a plant, though, wouldn't it? All you gotta do is grow towards the sun.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
But maybe that's all you really have to do as a person, you know, figure out what your source of, you know, of, I mean, is there a sun in our lives that we just have to be receptive to, and that'll take care of everything else?
I don't know. I know, I'm still waiting for some sort of profound moment, some like ringing of the bell, you know, dong.
Right.
And then
well, this could be it, this phone call, Fred. If you just open yourself to it.
I actually haven't finished the story, so I'll finish the story. So she says to me, I have a secret, right? And in between our dates, I was thinking, you know, what the hell is she talking about? And so this alien thing came up, because it made sense, you know, because she had a weird accent, too, and it would change, and she was just really, you know, amazing in the sack and all that stuff. And as it turns out, she did reveal to me her secret. She said, I have to tell you my secret, right? And I said, okay, tell it to me. She said, well, I'm actually a sex addict. And she's like,
oh, gosh. You know, man, this is one of those annoying stories.
And she's in the 12-step program, and she's only on step 6. So this is a relapse. And
you know, I've always wondered if you could go to those things to meet women.
Well, I mean, if you want to meet complete women who are completely out of their minds, yeah, I guess.
Well, so, but she slept with you? I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. She was like, it was probably in the top, you know, 5 sexual, you know, encounters of my lifetime or whatever. Maybe even the best, who knows. But it was just amazing. It was amazing. And, so I asked her, I said, so what's the difference between a sex addict and, a nymphomaniac? And she said, there isn't any, that's the same thing.
Yeah, that's what I think, guessed.
So, but it was a relapse. She's only on step 6, and she really needs to work through, and so she wanted to tell me, because after today, I'm never contacting you again, you know. So I was like, fine, you know, that's weird, but I understand you need to work on yourself, definitely. I've been in meetings before, but for other reasons, not for sex addiction, but I understood that, yeah, she should do it, finish it, you know, and then she was like, yeah, and I'll probably be done in about 6 months. And I said, okay, well, just why don't you call me in 6 months, you know, or however long. Because she was pretty fascinating, like since my last girlfriend, 2 years ago, I haven't met anyone in 2 years at all that was as stimulating intellectually and physically as she was. So, that being said, she, you know, said, I'm cutting you off.
Yeah.
The problem was I got back home, like I dropped her back off at her apartment, and then I came home. And I was cleaning up my room and washing my sheets or whatever, you know. And I found her sock. she had left a sock over here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just feel like I need to return that sock to her. So I probably should.
That's sort of like the alien leaves something. How do you get it back to the alien?
Yeah.
Like maybe that is the homing device or something.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. So, you know, and she's, I don't know, she says she disappears a lot. She moves around, and like in her purse, she had like 5 or 6 different cell phone chargers. And I was like, why do you have 5 or 6, you know, you have an iPhone, you have one phone, why do you have so many chargers? And she says, oh, they're for different zones.
Ah, like Beetlejuice.
I have no idea. I mean, okay, I guess she travels a lot. So.
Oh, yeah, she must. So I will, I have to get off of my neighbor's room right now.
Anyway, I had to share that with you.
Thank you.
Sharing?
Thank you. I'll send you the call. I'll send you the recording that we made, and you can edit it down.
Yeah, post it on a cult stats.
Okay. All right, Fred. Yeah. Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks so much, Nick, and we'll be in touch, man. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Monday.
All right.
See you.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right.